I really wanted us to try and position what I'm saying in relation to what is a large amount of activity. And you can please recognise that, you know, the 2020s is going to be an amazing decade where a lot of that resourcing is going to be pulled down, subject to government decisions in the future. The position, though, for DST, we're not necessarily going to be the guys that are going to be operating stuff. We're not going to have the heavy weight on our shoulders of acquisition and sustainment. You will hear later on in this conference from those who do that. The bit I'm going to talk about is about how the research can be used to excite and create leapfrogging and disruptive capabilities for consideration by those who are making those decisions and making those acquisitions and operational pieces. So this doesn't necessarily say this is definitely what the solution is for the operation, but it's about the S&T trying to excite those people who are doing that with the art of the possible, and going into some areas of research which may be somewhat different from the traditional supply capabilities that people acquire. So I'll just go into that journey then of really what I've got in terms of an S&T roadmap, which hopefully has been used to excite things. So let's start with quite an odd image. You and I, day to day, we use space resources. And we're not really aware of how to operate space assets, be they on the ground or in space. We don't go into a control room to do that. We just use our phone or our watch to get, you know, either entertainment or positional information from space, and you don't really care how it's happened. For the military user, it's not quite like that, especially when it comes to situational awareness type products. You know, there's a complex chain of command, there are operational rooms, there are international relationships to take considerations, and it's not quite as seamless and unsighted as it is for the commercial world. Plus, we have additional demands and special missions that we want to do which don't really match very well to that way of using it. But I wanted to explore the possibility of actually moving things in that direction, such that the military, all the users, can access space in a seamless way, in a similar manner to which you can see some of the entertainment commercial products that we get. So that's the sort of premise for some of the activities I'm going to sort of talk about in this piece. So let's start off with some of the more obvious pieces. Let's start off with the boxes that fly around in space, satellite technologies. We're all very familiar with the use of low Earth orbit space and the fact that there's a huge amount of investment commercially going into that. So wherever commercial investment is going, there are games to be won there in terms of investment. There's lots of really expensive technology that costs billions to create, which will be developed to meet some of the market demands in the commercial environment. So we're going on a journey to catch up and learn with some of those things, and then take the forefront and try and apply this technology for military needs. So with small satellites, now I'm talking about those things which are from shoeboxes or toasters all the way to washing machines up to the 100 kilo plus type category, but not beyond that. Low Earth orbit, you know, up to about 800 or so kilometres. So we have got a program already underway where we've been developing small satellites, learning how to both build and operate small satellites in defence. Been doing that for a few years now, and we have a family of satellites, the Buccaneer and the M-series, which are up in space and operating at the moment. But we're working our way towards more of the larger sort of 100-kilo type payload, which at the moment is the current thinking as to the direction we will go in terms of being able to deliver a significant capability to the operators. Those systems are not just sensing platforms, they're communication platforms. They will also contain significant amount of processing and autonomy processing and software solutions. And we've been working on some of those things for some time now. And also, we're looking at payloads, both RF and EO, for a number of missions. Now, remember, the idea here is to provide some sort of persistence capability for both communication, surveillance, and position navigation and timing across the whole of the Indian Pacific region. So those are the sort of things we're going at. One of the biggest players here for us in our research program is we have put our all into the bid, that is the SmartSat CRC. So that is a currently pending decision from government as to if the CRC is funded, but we have a significant investment proposal in there, and we hope that that community in that collaboration is going to be what the R&D engine, which will help us develop the future SmartSat satellite technologies for us. So then we move on then to one of the perhaps more unique features for defence. Now, in commercial world, you need security. But in defence, you need security as well, but you need assurance of access. So you really don't want to be into an operation where things start falling over. Please, you know, talk to your vendor about your service whilst you're in operation. So you need that to be working all the time. So that's going to be quite an incentive push as developing the new technologies in this field. So we need the communication systems that we have to be secure, likely to be not intercepted. Space is a contested environment today and will increasingly be so. So we need to be able to cope with interference with satellites, both electronically and physically. In that case, we also not only need to look at the protection measures and counter-cyber capabilities that we will put into these systems, but we also need to be able to look at manoeuvrability. So we want to be able to avoid not just debris, but also deliberate interventions with the systems. And actually, one of the key areas of assured access is my sort of cartoon rocket here, is replenishment. If we lose systems, we need to be able to put them back quickly. So we need to be able to launch and put back into orbit pretty quickly capability. Some of the previous talks have been talking about the unique things about Australia. Australia is a quiet environment for launching rockets. If you want to try and launch rockets in Florida, you have to wait a hell of a long time between launches. One of the unique things about why New Zealand has a launch capability and why the US is invested in that is they can get licensed to launch every 72 hours, and I believe they're negotiating for every 48 hours. So actually, this is the place if you want to launch quickly. So that's a family of activities that we want to investigate in the research program. If we then move on to constellations, we are not considering that a space solution, the space element of it, is about operating a satellite. It's about a constellation and network. So we're looking at different forms of constellations, so that's complete distributed networks. We're looking at clusters flying in formation, which are then connected to each other. Core to this is the inter-satellite communication network in space. Now, here we're looking at intelligent satellites, as I was talking before. They're now communicating to each other. They're creating a network in space. The other key thing in terms of performance we're looking for is the ability to be persistent, to provide persistent observations of certain parts of the world. To do that with satellites that are just whizzing over means you give just very partial looks. We believe that with constellation technologies, we can create resonant orbiting solutions which enable us to get a satellite flying over the horizon persistently, so you get some form of stare from a low Earth orbit solution, and you need a constellation to do that. So now we've got smart satellites, we've got them flying in formation in space, we've got the secure technologies, they're removable and we can replace them. So that's the building up in terms of the concepts we're looking for. Now, as previously mentioned, space capability is not all about the stuff that is in space. In order to be able to be resilient to both the collision possibilities of debris in low Earth orbit, but also those actions of others, space situation awareness is key to automatically link in to that constellation and make that information aware to the satellite constellation so it can automatically reposition itself and adapt. Is a very important feature of this concept. And I think the solutions that we're looking for in terms of space situation awareness will cover a number of technologies, from some detection capabilities with RF systems, both passive and active, but also then into the high-precision tracking with electro-optic systems. So that's a key part of the solution, but it really is an integrated system, and then we'll be communicating and linking that to the spaceborne capability. If you knit that lot together, we're looking at how can we create then a space cloud service that is integrated, self-adapting, doesn't rely on a command control system directly to ground-based command centres, that is fairly autonomous in that respect. It's commandable strategically, but also is accessible by tactical users in the field, be they flying in a jet, in a ship, in a submarine, or in a walking around the city, being able to call up those services, the system adapt to that quickly and provide the products they need. Now, in some cases, that requires things to shift around in space and will take time. The physics still applies here. But that's the end vision in terms of what's driving us to pick and make the technology choices that we hope to have. In support of that, things will be different. You know, we're not necessarily going into a space centre and sit at terminals to get access to space. Looking at the options of having locally distributed apps and capability for people to get those products, pull them down securely from this space cloud smart space service that we hope to provide. Now, you would note that this wasn't specifically on the procurement line, because this sits across as a concept that may deliver to all of those different areas. And in some cases, other solutions will be adopted, but we're hoping that by putting up this and demonstrating this sort of capability, or especially the bits that are difficult to do, that we can show that this is really the art of the possible within the next 10 years or so of development. So we're not talking about really long-distance research. Now, so where are we in defence on this? So we have developed in DST an S&T strategy to deliver these concepts. The big icon there on the left is sort of trying to illustrate the ground and space elements, the integration, and the features that we're asking for from it. The presentation is called a roadmap, so we actually have our roadmap here, which, as you can see, takes us from early work looking at getting satellites to cooperate, which is roughly where we are about now. We actually have started on this with our satellite work. And then we're looking at how we integrate the space situation awareness stuff. I think the very last slide in the previous presentation was the Space Fest. That work is moving forward and will be actually integrating to give us some products. And then we're looking at how we can get some products such as more advanced smart satellites within the 5 year and getting those demonstrated and get those up into space and realized. And then we start to pull those together into constellations, integrate the secure elements, including replenishment, and finally start commissioning what we're calling a resilient space capability. That puts on the table, and that will be some form of embodiment of the cloud that we're talking about. It will probably involve us doing this in concert with some of our international military partners as well, as this vision is not dissimilar to some other nations as well. But that's our 10-year plan. Fits well within the scope of the programmes that you'll notice. Has to be, otherwise we haven't got any funding. But it's, I think, a very important year for us this year. So not only have we got, hopefully, a decision on the SmartSat CRC, which will help us with the SmartSat technology. In DST, I'm launching a science and technology capability for space technology. We're putting them into a separate building to show that we've got big investment and more staff working on space. And also, as was mentioned in the previous talk, the Next Generation Technology Fund. This season is the first season where we're now getting going through the investment process to start releasing significant funding from the Next Generation Technology Fund into space to fund this sort of program. And most importantly, sitting on top of that, is the adoption or the migration of this DST view onto a defence view. And so the defence S&T strategy for space hopefully will come into place and will be adopted by defence as a whole, because we have a governance group that's meeting for the first time this year. Finally, though, I've sort of said we're going to do everything. But there is a key challenge which drives us down the to pick winners, and that is, if you're going to put a smart system in space, it soon and quickly becomes not smart, becomes obsolete. If we build satellite systems which get bigger and bigger, have more and more capability to meet these needs, and we coat them in gold, they're going to cost $100 million. If they cost $100 million, we want to keep them in space for a long time. If we keep them in space for a long time, they become obsolete. We need those things to be taken out of space quickly so they don't last very long, like 3 years. So to do that, they have to be low cost, and we need to drive that cost down and compromise on capability to do that. Now, the reason why I've got a picture of Lewis coming off in a corner here is it's similar to the F1. If you are going to drive an F1 car, you need to go around the corner at 200 kilometres an hour, otherwise you will skid off. It's counterintuitive. You have to go fast around the corner to get the downforce. If you go slowly around the corner, you will come off. Same here. These have to be low-cost systems to be able to be replenished quickly to remain high performance. And that's the key industrial challenge and technology challenge for us to face. I think that's me in terms of what I was going to say today. Thank you very much.